And when we empower nurses with insight into how incredibly special they are in terms of their skills, their expertise, their input, then they can have these conversations on the same level as other providers, because we are all professional, we all fill our roles, and we're all part of a healthcare team, and we're there to help the patient in whatever way we can.
How can nurses feel more empowered, have a seat at the table, and bring about transformational change in 21st century nursing practice and healthcare? Let's talk all about it with nurse and author Jennifer Theetz, right here on episode 464 of The Nurse Keith Show. Hey there, this is Nurse Keith. This podcast is about you and your personal professional development, your career, and the healthcare system writ large. And I'm here to share education, ideas, diatribes, and informative interviews with some of the most inspiring people from the worlds of nursing, healthcare, entrepreneurship, and beyond. I love having you along for the ride, and I thank you from the bottom of my nurse podcaster's heart for being part of the Nurse Keith Nation. If you'd like to help other people find the show, consider leaving a rating and review on Apple Podcasts, or just share the show with anyone who you think might enjoy it from any app where you happen to be listening. And if you'd like to become a patron, go to patreon.com, patreon.com/nursekeith. As little as $2 a month can help a great deal in terms of helping to keep the show going. The show notes will be at nursekeith.com in the drop-down menu labeled podcasts, and they'll also be in any app where you find yourself listening. And like I said at the top of the show, we're here with Jennifer Theetz, nurse, author, and nurse leader, who's here to share some of her thoughts with us about a lot of the dynamics happening in healthcare right now. And Jennifer, I'm curious, what led you to want to write a book and to address some of the more timely issues that are affecting nurses right now?
Yeah. Hi, Keith. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you so much. I wrote this book now because I believe that we are in the worst healthcare crisis in living memory, and something has to be done soon. I believe that nurses are integral to healthcare, obviously, but more so to the well-being of patients. When you consider that 50%, in some places above 50% of the entire global healthcare workforce comprises of nurses, and that we touch 90% of patients, it shows you how important nurses are in this healthcare crisis. I believe that what happens to nurses happens to patients. And if we are able to change the workplace for nurses, I believe we can help turn around this healthcare crisis. And so basically, this book has been in me for a year or so. I had the opportunity to sit down here in Mexico, where I'm currently living, and write a book. And the reason I chose this specific book is that I wanted to help empower nurses with tools that they need and can use in their own workplace environments. There's this great African proverb that I love. It says, you cannot build a house for yesterday's summer. And this is so apropos, I think, of what's happening in healthcare. We are a totally different workspace now. COVID happened. The whole global economy was affected, particularly healthcare. We have had enormous changes. And yesterday's house, or yesterday's summer, is not working today. The way nurses are working is unsustainable at this point. And so I think there should be changes.
And what do you think are the some of the most unsustainable aspects of practice right now?
Well, nurses are caring for patients who are much sicker than they used to be. You know, we know acuity levels are raising, you know, becoming almost unbelievable in many places. And with the shortage of nurses, nowadays, nurses are stuck in jobs where they're wearing two or three hats. They obviously do their own nurse-specific roles, but then they're also doing things like non-specific roles, like you know, finding patients that are say lost in a hospital. You know, they're getting phone calls from transporters, from physicians. They're doing vital signs. They are constantly following up on discharge instructions, etc. They're not allowed to work in their role, doing their nurse-specific tasks because they are so busy and overwhelmed at work.
And what are some of the main points you feel like we need to address, and how do we begin the conversation?
So compassion fatigue is something that I think every nurse is experiencing to a greater or lesser extent. It's something that is driving nurses away as they burn out, they're leaving, just worsening the whole shortage of nurses. And so I have a chapter in my book which really focuses on compassion fatigue. And I use an article by Peters, and she wrote this fantastic article in 2018, speaking about compassion fatigue, which has been cited in a lot of the medical journals. And she boils down six characteristics of compassion fatigue. And she says that obviously long-term exposure to suffering in patients is something that causes compassion fatigue, something that we can't change at the moment in healthcare. The next point is the ability to be compassionate. Again, nurses are fundamentally compassionate in their DNA. We can't change that. There's a very high use of self at work at this point in nurses. Again, that's something that will continue in this healthcare crisis. And then exposure to soaring levels of stress. This we can't change. However, there are two points that we can change as nurses and that our organizations can help us with. And the first point is we as nurses tend to have an inability to maintain our professional boundaries at work. So this is something that I address in the book, how to maintain professional boundaries, what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And then the second point is lack of self-care. Again, this is something that we can address in healthcare. Nurses can look after themselves more carefully. And I have a four-point plan in my book that addresses self-care, which is slightly different from the general self-care books that are out there. I can go into that specifically later on.
Sure. So if we start with boundaries, so we're talking about personal boundaries between the nurse and his or her patients, is that right?
Yes, but also very important is providers and leadership. A lot of nurses are taking on roles and tasks that they wouldn't normally do because they're asked of it. And I think we say yes often when we feel that we can't say no for whatever reason, whether it's we don't want to disappoint our charge nurse, or we're in a rush and we haven't had time to really think about what we need to do, then we take on tasks that we should not be taking on. And I think by empowering nurses with the knowledge that they are the experts, that they are they do have the expertise, and that they can say no to a situation that they feel is unsafe for themselves or their patients, that they have that ability to do so when needed. So I go into that quite a lot of detail in my book.
And if you want to share just one idea or notion behind why you feel like it's so hard to say no.
Nurses are generally the most compassionate people in the world. And I know you as a nurse too, Keith, you've worked with many, many nurses who are very other-centric, very patient-centric. We don't concentrate a lot on ourselves. And I think we are to a certain extent, because of our roles, people pleasers. We're here to help, we're here to care. And we want to be able to affect change and help patients and our colleagues and our leaders, but often at the sake of our own mental health. And we have this general inability to say no to things that are asked of us that are unacceptable. And I think it is just the way we are as nurses. We are other-centric. We are there to help. We say yes. We are a team player, often at the expense of our own safety mentally, because we are overwhelmed at work.
And do you think some of that stems from being coming from a subservient model where we began historically as quote unquote the handmaidens of physicians? And have we not made the leap to the 21st century in terms of being more self-empowered, individuals rather than being in service to others?
Right. I think you're exactly right. Coming from South Africa and training in South Africa over 30 years ago, when I trained, we were wearing caps and stockings and high heels to work. I mean, you can't believe it, capes, et cetera, like Florence Nightingale. And we were very subservient. We would always say, yes, doctor, no, doctor. There wouldn't be any chance to actually challenge a physician on an order, et cetera. And I think this has gone on for years and years. But as nurses are becoming academically much smarter, as we are understanding, with a newer education, as we are understanding our worth, the experience of nurses at the bedside, dealing with these patients year after year after year, whereas a physician hasn't had quite as much exposure in many ways to a certain, patient condition. I think we are now learning to start adding to the conversation and saying, well, yes, Dr. Smith, but have you considered maybe this or that? It's a very difficult thing to break, because the current practice is to adhere to what, the orders you're given and not to challenge. And I think when nurses challenge because of their own expertise and experience, the patients are the ones that benefit. And here I just want to clarify, when I say challenge, I'm not speaking in any way about being, rude or threatening in any way. It's simply one professional to another, with the same patient on the same team, being able to have a comfortable conversation with another provider, and being confident enough to say, this is what I believe needs to happen, or I have experienced this, or this is what the patient needs, I believe, at this time.
And do you think this should be addressed during nursing education, or does this have to also move into the workplace and not just be something we address, during nurses training?
So you bring up a great point, Keith, in that nurse training is the basis of obviously of who we are as nurses and how we work. But it needs to be more than addressed at nurse training. I think when a nurse actually goes into the hospital or into the facility wherever they are choosing to work, they need the self-confidence. It's all very well to understand something academically, but to actually be in that position and challenge somebody because you have the expertise or the knowledge is totally different. And when we empower nurses with the insight into how incredibly special they are in terms of their skills, their expertise, their input, then they can have these conversations on the same level as other providers, because we are all professional, we all fill our roles, and we're all part of a healthcare team, and we're there to help the patient in whatever way we can.
And from my perspective, this in some way comes back to that adage of, if you don't have a seat at the table, you're going to end up on the menu.
Yes.
So do you feel that nurses have just ended up on the menu all too often, and that lack of a seat at the table has led us to this position of feeling like we don't have the power and the wherewithal and the even the ability to make our opinions known?
Yes, this you, what you've just said is very true. we have been, the nurses' voices have been lacking in the conversation for transformational change. There's no two ways about it. And I think part of the reason, and the reason I say this is because I come from a bedside background. I've worked majority of my years at the bedside. And we have a certain paradigm as nurses working, you know, at the front, on the front lines. We are task oriented. We're there. We're nursing our patients. We're getting the job done. We're going home. And often we don't have the wherewithal or the interest in some cases to actually address what's going on in the bigger picture in healthcare. And so we as nurses understand what we need to be able to do our jobs safely. But to get that message across, when you are not dealing with leadership, when you are not having those conversations generally, is very difficult. And I think this is why the nurse leaders currently who are on LinkedIn, who are on their different social platforms, using their voices to get the message across, these people are so important, because the majority of nurses, I think, are not at that point where they can challenge existing beliefs. They're just too busy surviving their shifts and doing the best they can in this healthcare crisis. Mm-hmm.
So if we can have meaningful conversation and we can feel like we have a right to be participants in that conversation, and what we share actually feels valued and heard and listened to and reflected on, do you feel like that's enough? Is that enough of a sea change? If we have a seat at the table, that will help shift things in the direction we need it to shift.
Well, Keith, that's the start. So yes, mm-hmm. we must have a seat at the table. We must start the conversation. But meaningful conversation is worthless unless there is change. If we can sit around and speak about healthcare crisis, all day, nothing is going to change. We need to actually be able to work with our administrations, work with our different leaderships, and come up with a plan on how we see change, what we need as nurses. And this is why I think it's the template in my book is important, in that it starts the conversation. Nurses can have a working document where they can sit down and leadership can see they've addressed the mission and culture of the organization. They understand the goals. They are the ones who understand how care is provided in this particular facility. And as the experts, they should be part of the change process. So we can all agree that we are facing a huge healthcare crisis. Organizations are fully aware of this. Things have to change. Everybody in healthcare is aware of this. But what is the change and how to do it? And that is where nurses come in, because they are the experts. They are in these workplaces. They are. They have all of the information needed by organizations, by leadership, to number one, state the problem, and number two, state what needs to change, what they need. Maybe it's auxiliary help, maybe it's more resources. I mean, there are many different reasons why healthcare is failing, but the nurses are the experts, and they are the ones that can transform healthcare as long as they are in the conversation and part of the change process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a few minutes ago, I brought up the notion of education and what happens during the educational process when nurses are going through their training. And I've always had this fantasy, and many would say that it will probably always remain a fantasy, that nursing students and medical students actually have a little bit of co-educational experiences during the course of their training and their education that might not necessarily look like rounding together and having clinical experiences together, but I'm picturing more courses on leadership, courses on transformational change, courses on perhaps communication and teamwork and group dynamics, and maybe courses on the moral and ethical underpinnings of healthcare delivery. So I've just always had this idea that if nursing students and medical students could be educated side by side with some parallels, and I know there's a lot of differences, that we could start those conversations before we were hired and we become part of the workings of the interior workings of the healthcare system. Have you given any thought to that in the ways in which our educational experiences are so siloed?
Yes, Keith, what a wonderful idea. And really and truly, I think in a perfect world, not even does it happen to be in a perfect world, but I think you've bring up such an important point, because we work together, nurses and physicians, side by side, shoulder to shoulder, in the majority of the healthcare that we provide. We mm-hmm. have to have a mutual respect for each other. We have to have understanding of each other's roles and understanding of each other's hardships. Because I think if we can learn from an early point, what it means to be a nurse or a physician, how important we are to each other, how vital it is that we are able to communicate well for the sake of the patient, that would change the way nurses and physicians work together. So I think it's a great idea. We are very siloed. I understand physicians are equally stressed. They have very short 15-minute visits. And I really respect our physicians we work with. I think they're brilliant, many of them, and they are under tremendous pressure. At the same time, it would be lovely for the physicians to understand what nurses are going through and the fact that we're also brilliant and we also are under pressure. And if we can respect and work together, collaborate with each other in a really effective way, then not only do we both, nurses and physicians, benefit, but ultimately the care we provide to our patient is affected and becomes much safer and generally better in every respect.
Mm-hmm. And something I'm observing, speaking to a lot of nurse practitioners these days, is that especially NPs who work in primary care and right. also specialty care and kind of the clinic setting, they're also being ushered into the 15-minute model, the 15-minute visit model, which I think is not doing a whole lot in terms of increasing the quality of care. It feels like it's decreasing the quality of care. So nurses who decide they want to become providers and be able to impact patients in a more, in a different way, on a different level, mm-hmm. they're like square pegs being pounded into the round hole of the medical model of the 15-minute visit. And right, so I'm hearing a lot of rumbling, actually more than rumblings. I'm hearing a lot about that out in the ethers right. in terms of advanced practice nurses. So a lot of dynamics going on. And when we come back from the break, I'd like to talk about these 4 points regarding self-care that you referenced, that you said is a little different than some of the other models that you've seen out there. And I'd also like to speak to the statistics that you brought up by Pereira et al. Regarding a template for how nurses can use that as a model for how to approach strategically these conversations with management when they want to push for change. So there's a lot more to talk about, and we'll be right back for the second half of episode 464 with nurse author Jennifer Theetz right here on the Nurse Keith Show. Welcome back to the second half of the episode. We're here again with friend of the pod and my new friend and colleague, Jennifer Theetz. And Jennifer, before the break, we were talking about a lot of things, but we were talking about the silos in which nurses and physicians are educated. We were talking about the constrictions on nurses in terms of their perceived ability to affect change and to have their voices heard and to have their solutions and ideas accepted and valued and to be part of the conversation. And I brought up that notion of having a seat at the table or being on the menu, and you seem to resonate with that idea. Mm-hmm. And during the course of the first part of our conversation, you mentioned self-care, and there's a lot being talked about in terms of self-care. Some of it can feel a little cliche. Some of it can feel like people are talking about the same concepts over and over. Not that they're bad concepts, just that we need new ideas brought into this conversation about wellness and self-care. Yeah. So what are the 4 points that your self-care model revolve around when it comes to nurses leaning into their own well-being more?
Okay, so thanks, Keith. Yeah, this is a very big and important topic in nursing at the moment, and there's just so much written about self-care and what needs to happen. So my 4-step program is slightly different in that in step one, I really try to focus on communication and how important it is to ask for help when you're overwhelmed in your work environment. What's happening, I think, a lot of times, nurses are dealing with chaos in the workplace, with situations that are very difficult. They're just getting on and making sure that they take the best care they can of their patients, and they're not having the opportunity to as much as they could, to actually ask for help and then record the fact that they needed help in order to give a clear picture of what is happening in healthcare. So my step number one would be the importance of asking for help when you need it and making a brief document or some type of note that you can bring back when you come to your leadership and explain what you needed and why you needed it at that specific time. The second point of my 4-step program is to understand and accept that we are more important than we think we are, and that in order to be able to care for patients, we have to care for ourselves first. So it's this acceptance of, yes, I've always been programmed and I'm patient-centric, but in order to do this, I have to start with myself. I have to start taking care of myself first before I can care for patients. So that's just the whole acceptance of who we are and why self-care is so important. My third point goes into self-care as we know it, obviously stress reduction, our diet, our rest and relaxation, etc., exercise. So I mentioned that. But the step number 4, I think, is something very different in self-care at the moment, and something I'd like to really concentrate on if possible.
Yeah, what is that? What is that 4th point?
Okay, so step number 4 is the importance of paying it forward. I think what is happening in nursing to a large extent is that we are on in flight flight or fright mode, you could almost say. I mean, we're just running with 1,000 different tasks. We're very siloed. We work with our patients. We put our heads down and we just go for it during our work day. We don't have the time or ability often to actually reach out to another nurse. And paying it forward is when we as nurses, number one, understand the importance of paying it forward, and number two, make it a priority. And when I say paying it forward, it's just basically helping each other. Nurses get a bad rap in many situations, especially with the newer nurse grads, for eating our young, for nurse bullying, for not being there for each other. Imagine, Keith, if we had workplaces where part of our workflow would be to pay it forward to another nurse. So just as we would have workflow where we care for patients, et cetera, we would have workflow when we deal with each other, and that would just be paying it forward. Being kind, being encouraging, having a smile, being available, being helpful. It's almost like you're putting into a bank. And the more you do this, the more you can withdraw because other nurses will respond around you. And when you are kind and helpful and are available, you know that it's going to be difficult for them not to be the same as you are. And so I think paying it forward is an immensely important concept in nursing and something that we are missing at this point because we are overwhelmed.
So when it comes to paying it forward, this concept that you're mentioning here,
It is a major cultural shift. However, Keith, it's simple. It's really simple. Let's face it. We all know how to be kind. We're kind to our patients every day. We know how to be kind. It's just another step to say, okay, I'm going to be kind to the nurses around me because they need me and I need them. And it's as simple as that. And when you do it, it's when you smile at people. When you say, hey, how are you? How was your day? And you interact with somebody, or when you see a nurse who's looking panic struck, just being able to go and say, can I help you? What can I do? This is something that's simple and that one can do. But I think we are so focused and overwhelmed that we forget to do this. And if we could start this in our work units, it would spread like wildfire. And as I said, it's like putting into a bank, it will come back to you. The other thing about helping and being kind is that there are physiological responses that happen in a person when they are kind. And it's called a helper's high. And what happens is when we are being kind to our patients, when we're being kind to each other, we release serotonin, oxytocin, and dopamine, and we get a hit. We feel good. So it's there, it's available, and it helps us to do our jobs. The other thing about being kind is that we know through science, through studies that are done, that kind people have less stress hormones, coursing through their systems. So again, the physiology of being kind is backing up what we know, which is kindness is good. But what happens to the giver when you're kind is really important because it helps us as well as somebody else. So being kind, we know it actually impacts our self-esteem. When you're a kind person, you know you're kind and you like yourself. So your self-esteem is affected, and then it improves our purpose and being. When we're kind and we go to work and we're kind to each other, we see, well, hey, this is my purpose. I'm Nurse Jennifer. I work in this environment. I work with Sue and Kathy and Fred and Bill. And, we're kind together and we're working, really great teamwork happens where I am. The other thing about being kind is that kind people stand out. Let's face it. When you're working in a team, if you have a kind nurse or a kind leader, everybody knows they stand out. For careers, if you work at being kind, you're going to stand out. And maybe when the next job opportunity comes and you're interviewed with five other nurses who have the same qualifications as you do or experience, because you are kind, because you're a team player, because you're known around your group as being somebody that people want to be with, they might well give the job to you. And it's as simple as that. So being kind, it's something that is just so fundamental to who we are. And something that we understand and know and that we appreciate. So let's just be kind to each other. It will change the culture, as you say, and it's a simple, easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm. And I want to point out, especially the work of Dr. Renee Thompson over at the Healthy Workforce Institute and the work that she's doing and her faculty are doing to help create circumstances and cultures where that is the norm and where we actually don't accept the type of aberrant, uncivil behavior that's been accepted among nurses for so long. So whatever strategies we can use and whatever tools we can use to weed out those who are not behaving in ways that are civil and that are kind, I think your point is well taken. And even as we create more kindness around us, we also need to figure out how to deal with the ones who are not. And I think leaders need to be empowered to be able to get rid of the ones who are the kind of the bad apples in the mix, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely. And you know, Keith, another thing that's really I've been thinking about a lot is that there are, we know for a fact, nurse bullying forms or causes toxic workplaces. So nurses are leaving. Now, what happens if an organization said, made it part of their advertising? We are an organization that does not tolerate bullying in any shape or form. And how we do this is, maybe an organization would be so focused on bullying that they could have some type of tribunal as part of HR, which would involve maybe a psychologist, the nurse that's being bullied, their nurse lead, and any witnesses that were part of the incident, having an opportunity to come together and sit around a table and talk about why did this happen? You know, why did you feel as the nurse that you needed to treat that your colleague like this? You know, if something like this existed, and nurses knew when they're coming into an organization, okay, this is a bullying-free zone. I can work here. And if I'm bullied, I have places to go. I can speak to leadership, and they're going to take these, my input very seriously. There's going to be a tribunal. We're going to sit around with a psychologist or, some type of a counselor to discuss, what's going on. I think that would be a magnet for nurses. Those organizations would be the organizations to go to work in your area when you have left nursing because of toxic workplaces.
Mm-hmm. And if the word gets out that certain workplaces are the ones where people are treated well, where they treat each other well, where teamwork is the norm, it's not the, it's not the aberration, then people will vote with their feet. I guess that's
right.
The hope.
And that's the hope.
And the workplaces that where those things are not encouraged, and that's not the type of cultures that are created, then they're going to see more and more attrition. And once their attrition gets to a certain point, they're going to look back and look at themselves and say, oh, maybe we need to change something, because why is everyone leaving and why is everyone flocking down the street?
Right.
So voting with our feet is also comes back to a point I've made before with in other conversations about this notion of internalized depression, where we don't feel we're worthy. And I think you're kind of making this point as well in your own way, that if we feel worthy of being treated well, if we feel worthy of a positive, healthy, non-toxic, bully-free workplace, then that's what we can demand, because we feel that we deserve it. And before we wind down, I just wanted to bring out one more point from your book, Nurses Matter, that I know is important to you. And this is some statistics. I think you mentioned Pereira et al., and there's probably others. And this has to do with, if we want to approach management with ideas for change, or we want to approach management with issues that we feel need to be addressed, we need to have a model for how to do that in order to be heard, to be understood, and also to be respected for what we're bringing to the table. So do you want to talk a little bit about these ideas and this notion of the model of how to approach management with strategies, especially when we're seeking transformational change?
Yes, Keith, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. So I think when a nurse understands that they have the expertise to create change, they'll be ready to do it. But being ready is not enough. We need to be able to go in as nurses to our leadership, whether it's obviously it'll start with your charge nurse, but then maybe your nurse manager and then your director. One needs a tool to use to get across the points that are most important to that nurse. Now, we've already said that nurses are the experts because they're in the workplace. They see what's happening. They understand the situation, and they understand what they need to change the work environment so that it starts working for patients and nurses. And this template that Pereira et al. Has come out with, they They use 5 points. And this, how I see this working and how I would use it as a nurse in a unit wanting to start change is I would make an appointment, sit down with my leadership and bring out this working document. And the 5 points would go like this. The first point would be there must be obviously an analysis of the current workplace. So the nurse, again, as the expert could say, I'm working 2B South and this is the nurse, this is the current situation. We are working with ratios of, you know, whatever the ratio is. The equipment needs we have, what we have on board and what we need. This is the where the unit sits, et cetera, et cetera. So to analyze your current workplace and have that in black and white in a document is important, because oftentimes nurse leaders or maybe just administration in general will not understand 2B South and will not understand what the situation is like. So to have a clear picture of the workplace and what you would like to change in that workplace. Secondly, obviously, there needs to be a goal. The goal and what it would be that you would like to happen if you were going to use your unit as a pilot. So this would be point two. The nurse would then say, in this situation, we can see what the current situation is, and this is what we or I as a nurse would like to happen if we were to pilot the change in my unit. Thirdly, then there would be the strategy selection. So this is when the nurse can sit down with the leadership at this time and say, this is the course of action that needs to happen in order to make these changes. Maybe it's to have a nurse, an extra nurse assistant on the floor. Maybe it's to have more equipment. Maybe it's to have a ward secretary so that the nurse's station is freed up so that charge nurse can work more closely with the patients and the nurses. It could be anything that is obviously specific to the unit that the nurse could then describe. So that would be the strategy selection, what the nurse would like changed, what course of action needs to happen. Number four would be how to implement the change. This is going to be a more difficult topic, obviously. But again, this is a conversation. This is a document that comes out and that everybody can work on and that the nurse could say, look, in order to implement this change, we are going to need a nurse assistant and five more blood pressure machines that work or whatever it is. So they would actually then at that point be able to actually describe what they need in order to implement the change. And then lastly, an outcome evaluation. And this obviously would not be something that they would have initially, but they would be able to say, I would like to do maybe a 3-month or 6-month pilot project in my unit. These are the outcomes I would like to see. Obviously, that we're going to evaluate this if possible. But this is a working document. Here I am. I've taken a very serious look at what needs to change. I'm prepared to explain to you what needs to change, how I see it can change. And then the evaluation afterwards with you in once that change has happened. And then you would obviously, the nurse would look at, you know, this is on a much deeper level and the actual template has many more subsections to each point, each of the 5 points. But they could then go into the mission and values of the organization, what the organization professes is important to them, what's actually happening. Obviously, there's so many different aspects, but this is all there to be tweaked by the nurse for their current workplace in their current organization. Mm-hmm.
It sounds like a strong template. And I think having a template like this when approaching administration is important for several reasons. One is which we need to approach them with the language that they understand.
Right.
Right. We can talk all we want about our feelings. We can talk all we want about, you know, sort of the quote unquote, you know, the soft skills, for instance, but organizations want something a little more, let's say, solid and practical.
Right.
They want a step-by-step process. They want a process by which we can evaluate the outcomes of that particular process we're piloting. And I like the idea of a pilot program. You're not just marching into the administrator's office to say, this is what we need right now, and this is the way we nurses want it to be. We're saying, let's pilot this idea, and then let's look and reevaluate it in a certain period of time. So I think coming at it from a very programmatic, systematic, step-by-step process, I think might help us to feel, to be more heard, because we're being very practical, right?
Right.
And I think we also need to bear in mind, of course, if we're asking for more FTEs, if we're asking for more equipment, if we're asking for more nurses' assistants, we need to bear in mind that when we talk to them, they're going to be thinking dollar signs. So we also need to bear in mind that there's part of the administration's perspective will be a little different than ours. So we need to be ready to negotiate, right? We need to be ready to hear their concerns as well, don't we?
Absolutely. I mean, this is a team approach. Mm-hmm. And coming, you know, as nurses, we are the experts when it comes to patient care and what we need, grassroots level. But obviously our administrators and our leaders are the experts when it comes to what a healthcare facility needs, budget-wise, et cetera, to keep the lights on. So there needs to be mutual respect. We as nurses are not the expert of everything, but and neither are administrators, the expert of the whole face of healthcare. Mm-hmm. We're all part of a team, and when we work together, we can make change that's really effective and that will help our patients firstly, and then ourselves and our organizations. And this is what I think everybody's hoping for.
Mm. All right. And the book is Nurses Matter. And where can they find it other than at nurses-matter.com?
So it will be available on Amazon, mm-hmm. and in Ingram Sparks. And it'll be published in the next couple of weeks. And I'm excited about it. I think there's a lot of information that nurses, you know, certainly newer nurses can use to help them on their nursing journey.
Wonderful. And before we go, Jennifer, I have four quick questions I ask all my guests. Are you game for a little lightning round?
Oh, absolutely. Go for it.
Okay. So the first question is, how do you define success, either personally or professionally?
Well, let me do it personally, first of all. Success for me is the ability to achieve something that I really want to achieve, and do it in the way that I know has been done well. So that's success for me. It doesn't mean being successful in business or making more money or anything like that. It just means that I can do something that I really want to do. And once I've done it, I know I've done it well.
Excellent. Okay. Second question. Could you name or describe a person who's really inspired you in the course of your life? They could be living or dead. Very famous, or someone who none of us would ever have had the pleasure to have known?
She's living. I have a nurse leader. Her name is Rachel McConaughey. She is a director of oncology. And she is somebody who has inspired me constantly for years and continues to inspire me, even though I don't work with her. She truly epitomizes who a nurse is, and she has one of the most caring hearts I have ever seen and had the pleasure to work with. But she's also very fair and practical. And where I can be more sort of soft, I have more of a soft touch and more of a soft focus because I'm the nurse on the ground. She's always been this stable, practical, kind, extremely talented negotiator, just a wonderful all-round person. So Rachel McConachy is her name. And when I grow up, I want to be like Rachel McConachy.
That's lovely. Okay. Third question, penultimate question. Is there a book or a movie, not necessarily an absolute favorite, but a book or film that has had a major impact on the way you think, the way you live your life, the way you approach your relationships, your work, anything at all?
Okay. Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So a book or a movie? Mm-hmm. So I watched a documentary a while back about relationships. And it was very interesting because it's actually called The Split. And it was a documentary that was beautifully done on the relationship between a husband and wife, but there was so much more to it because it was relationships with family members, with the past, with the present, etc. And they really looked at depth into what it means to play your role in a relationship. And I love that. I think as nurses, you know, we are playing a very specific role. And maybe what we need to do is look at the same depth at our relationship with our patients and what it means to be able to care. Mm. So that was something that I found fascinating.
Thank you. Thanks. Okay, last question. If you were named Queen of the World tomorrow, what is one of the first actions you'd like to take to improve the lives of your subjects?
I would start huge, huge talking arenas where I would get everybody in, give them a microphone, give them a seat. If I could, you know, give them the ears of everybody around them, and I would just say, talk, communicate, get out what's inside you. Let's get to know each other. Let's get to share. Let's get to really be present for each other in the world while we journey along our paths. So that's what I'd like to do.
That's lovely. I love that. Conversation.
Conversation. So important. Can you imagine talking arenas, conversation arenas? Mm-hmm. We need them.
That's lovely. Okay. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much. People can find the book at nurses-matter.com. They can also find it on Amazon. And thank you so much for being here. Thanks for bringing this book to light and all of your ideas and concepts and ways in which nurses can empower themselves and empower one another. And I really appreciate you being here on the show with us.
Oh, lovely, Keith. It's been my pleasure. Thank you so much. What a great experience. Thanks again.
Well, there you have it. Thanks for listening to this episode. Remember, the show notes will be at nursekeith.com or on any app where you happen to be listening. Remember to go to nurses-matter.com to order the book, or you can also find Nurses Matter on Amazon. If you need personalized holistic career coaching to elevate your nursing career, please look no further than Nurse Keith Coaching and nursekeith.com. Mention the show and get 10% off your first coaching package. You can become a patron at patreon.com/nursekeith. That's patreon.com/nursekeith. We're proud members of the Health Podcast Network at healthpodcastnetwork.com. And we are produced by the inimitable Rob Johnston of 520R Podcasting. And before we say goodbye, I'll leave you with this quote by Helen Keller. The best and most beautiful things in the world cannot be seen or even touched. They must be felt with the heart. Be well, dig deep, seek joy, keep in touch. This is Nurse Keith saying adios till next time from beautiful Santa Fe, New Mexico. And Jennifer Thietz, my new friend and colleague, saying arrivederci from
Mexico, Lake Chapala.
From Lake Chapala in Mexico. Thank you so much. Thank you to everyone for listening. And we'll catch you on the proverbial flip side.